Welcome back to the Lead Worship World podcast. My name's Christian and I get to be your host for this episode. Today's guest is Robbie C. Robbie is known for being the front of the Robbie C Band and for songs such as Song of Hope and Oh Love That Will Not Let Me Go. More recently, Robbie's joined the team at Worship Initiative and has found himself in a role that is the perfect complement to his experience, his passion, and the knowledge and wisdom that he has. In this episode, we discuss everything from why it's important to sing the Psalms, right through to leadership health and different questions you can ask yourself as you're working out if you're doing a great job at leading your communities. Honestly, it's a conversation that I wish I had when I was a much younger worship leader at the start of my journey, and I hope that it blesses all of you as you listen to the incredible wisdom from Robbie C. Well, Robbie C, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I really appreciate it.
Christian. I'm thrilled. Thank you, man.
I was saying to you offline, I don't think we've had as popular a guest that hasn't been on the podcast as yourself. I walked around the office telling people I was filming a conversation with you and they were all very excited. So well, I don't know if that's because they're Texan as well or if you just have a great reputation, loads of wisdom to share.
You know, Texans kind of stick with one another, so they may be biased.
Do you think it's the hometown hero thing playing out?
It's the hometown. You know, I'm from Houston, Texas, and I moved to Dallas, Texas. That may not feel like a big move to you, Christian, but it's a big move in this state. Yeah. It's kind of a big move. And so it's been really sweet. I mean, obviously I'm here at Worship Initiative and loving every second of the work here, but I'm a Houstonian in Dallas. So I'm learning what that means when I wear my Astros hat around town and I'm getting some looks and some stares, but it's been a sweet move. So still a Texan.
Still a Texas.
But just in a different city.
A different city. It's still mind-blowing to me how big Texas is. When we think about driving to a different part of Texas, I could cover most of Europe in the same amount of time from my old mindset. It's crazy.
Well, it really is, but most of Europe is prettier than what you would cover in a 2 days drive.
I didn't want to say that, but yeah, I'll agree with
you. Now, not Austin. Austin is beautiful, but you know, there's some parts. It's funny you say that because when you come from Louisiana back into Texas, I don't know if you've ever done that.
I haven't, no.
But when you come in, Houston is only maybe 90 miles away. Okay.
Okay. Right.
But on the sign, it says Houston, you know, 90 miles. And then it says El Paso, like 1,000 miles. And it's just Texas like flexing. You know what I mean? Like, just in case you were wondering, it's about to take you 1,000 miles to cross the state.
When we moved here, I found a picture that was kind of the outline of Texas, and then it placed the UK in there, and then some of France in there, and Germany, and all the rest of it. And I showed it to my kids, go, this is, and they're like, whoa, the place is massive. Like, yes, it really is.
It's great. Man.
Well, Robbie, I'm so excited. I think there are 100 different conversations we could have on this podcast today. We're going to try and narrow into a few themes, I think, as they come out, but would love for you to give a bit of a backstory to who you are and to why you're on this podcast. And many people will know you from your songs, such as Song of Hope and many others, and the Robbie C Band. And if I'm right, that kind of goes back to early 2000s when that band was in place. So tell us about a bit about that first, the genesis, the Robbie C Band, some of the early days there.
Yeah, we couldn't come up with any better name. it's almost a blessing and a curse, Christian, because I have friends who were in bands who they did have a name that they regretted. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
And so we just stuck with the Robbie C Band. I grew up in a household of music, man. I grew up around the church. I grew up as a pastor's kid. And sometimes when I hear people say that, that can go obviously two ways.
Yep.
I mean, that can be really beautiful or it can be tough. And I grew up in a pastor's home where my dad he loved Jesus in public and he loved Jesus in private.
Amazing.
That was just a massive part of when I think about that. You know what? He served and loved my mother and she, him. They just had this beautiful marriage and still do. And so I just am grateful for that. And I have a bunch of kids now. And I just think, man, it's one thing to have this public life, do podcasts, get to, you know, us hanging together and people watching that. But man, like, what is God doing in my home and in my heart?
Right.
That is what's going to last. And so when I think about my upbringing, it was a music filled house, pianos and guitars, and just we sang as a family. And it's how we were brought up, man. And so the idea of like writing songs and like, you know, starting a band, that felt kind of normal to me, honestly. So my high school days, I'm trying to figure that out. long story short, I go to college. I stayed in Texas. I went to Baylor University up in Waco, not too far from where
I've driven past it on the way to Buc-ee's. Yeah. So there we go. See?
Yeah, exactly. There's going to be a Buc-ee's on the way.
There's one, yeah.
And I, you know what? I met this guy my first week of school who was the strangest looking guy I had met and also just the most talented, one of the most talented guys I ever met. His name's David Crowder. We went to school. Wow, okay, together, and we helped start a church there. Yeah. And it was in those years, man, of leading worship with him. He would pick me up in his Honda Accord at 5:30 on Sunday morning. Amazing. And we would go set up a sound system and we would lead worship and tear the sound system back down.
Brilliant.
And he would drop me off at about 2 p.m. And honestly, man, it was the first time in my head that I went, you know what? I think if I'm going to do this for a living, it's going to be hard. I'd kind of thought, hey, I can sing a little bit. You know, maybe people will listen, we'll record music. That's easy, right? And that was the first time that I went, you know what? I think there's going to be a grind to this and it's worth it, but I had better learn how to do that. And so Crowder and I wrote a lot of songs together. I sang on his early records. He produced my records. I was introduced to two guys in 1997. One guy's name was Shane and the other guy's name was Shane. Imagine that. And they became lifelong friends of mine. We toured together. Man, it's crazy, Christian. I have pictures of them holding my firstborn.
Oh, wow.
And nowadays, fast forward to today.
Yeah.
My firstborn is a musician, guitar player here in town who occasionally plays with Shane and Shane.
Brilliant.
So very full circle for me to end up here. Along in between there, recorded a lot of records, was with EMI, which is now Capitol for many, many years. Had the chance just to like meet a bunch of amazing folks and to write songs about faith, love and loss and just life. And man, I'll just be honest with you. I just look back on the last two decades. Number one, just feel super grateful. And number two, and maybe this is the end of this, of the answer here, but just it has led me to the work that I'm doing today with Worship Initiative in ways that I could have never imagined.
Okay.
And so much of that work is really encouraging and helping invest in young leaders, you know, just feel super grateful. As I look back on the journey, I go, man, some of the ups and downs of what I've experienced are all kind of pointing to the work we're doing here.
That's amazing.
And I'm just so grateful for that. So that's my story in a nutshell. I did get married in there somewhere.
Okay.
25 years ago.
Okay. Congrats.
And we have four kiddos and just feel super blessed. Liz and I just feel super blessed to have taken this journey together.
That's fantastic. You mentioned Shane and Shane in there. I first became aware of Shane and Shane. I think it was a Passion One Day DVD. And I think they sang It Is Well With My Soul. And just that incredible leading such a huge congregation just with voices and guitars. I was like, oh my goodness, what an encouragement, but also what incredible talent and vulnerability. We've obviously hosted them here at Multitracks, but then a week or two ago, we were at Worship Together in Nashville and they led the opening night. And again, just two voices and acoustic guitar in that room was incredible. Such a gift, but also, great guys as I've got to hang out with them and get to know them as well.
Yeah, they are. And obviously they're the founders of Worship Initiative. And I'll just tell you this, man, and this is more of a personal note of just, you know, the older I get, just having some friends, them included, who just loved Jesus 25 years ago.
Right.
And are loving and pursuing Jesus today. I just am in that moment of life where I just go, God, I need that. I need to look around and see brothers and sisters who are just still going, pursuing the Lord, not perfect, humble.
Yeah.
And these guys are, I just am overjoyed to partner with them as we lead Worship Initiative together.
Amazing. I'm going to pull you back a little bit to some of the early days as I was doing some of my research and checking out some of your back catalog. And it's like, there's a really interesting crossover that I think happened where you saw success in inverted quotes, both in the Christian and secular market. And there were radios and TV shows. And I think One Tree Hill was listed in the credits there as well. What's interesting when I look today is I wonder if some of that's gone away, that early 2000s Christian band reaches wider audience trend that we don't necessarily see in the same way. Any thoughts or comments or why that's been a bit of a shift there or a change?
That's interesting that you asked that. And I think it's both potentially a positive and maybe a negative. I think one of the positives to your point is maybe there is less of that today because of how worship music has kind of taken over Christian music, I think, in a pretty exciting way.
Yeah.
Most of the popular songs that are even finding their way on radio are big playlists on streaming platforms. most of them actually have a corporate worship component. And so less of potential for crossover. I haven't thought a ton about that, but that feels like that might be number one. Hmm. Beyond that, I think, as is probably noted in other interviews or podcasts, is just the music industry as a whole has, you know, the formal music industry has condensed to a very small number of artists.
Yeah.
And there's tons of amazing music and beautiful art being made outside of the traditional label model. But, you know, I think there's probably just less of an opportunity. I think there's less artists, they're more focused. And I imagine that factors in as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think some of that has been really interesting for us as people that lived in a UK Christian culture. And now in the past few years, spent more and more time in the American Christian culture. I think there's a lot thinner borders between the two, Christian secular and the US, definitely than the UK. It would be unheard of for us to walk into a supermarket and see or hear or turn on a radio and hear Christian music in the same way, which still catches me out as I drive to work, even now.
You know, even as you're talking about that, Christian, I'm thinking about the days in college, Crowder and I in his apartment listening for songs that we might lead on Sunday.
Right. Okay.
On one hand, there was so much music in the United States being made that was quote unquote Christian music, right? I mean, it's really just tons, some of it really, really good. Most of that was not worship or corporate worship.
Okay.
And so a lot of the songs we were listening to were from the UK.
Right.
I mean, it was really when Delirious was starting out. Matt Redman was just kind of getting going. I think Tim Hughes was around there. I mean, there was worship music happening in the United States, but it wasn't as predominant. And so even some of the worship music that he and I would pull up, I mean, it was probably independent music that we had kind of stumbled upon.
Stumbled across.
And I think that's kind of flipped. I hadn't thought a ton about it, but it feels like
that's interesting. Today, you're right.
It really is kind of the inverse of that.
Yeah. It's funny you even say that. I think Crowder's cover of Obsession by Delirious is one of my favorite covers of Obsession that he ever did.
Yeah.
I think maybe on the Can You Hear Us album.
Yeah. You know, but, it is on that record. But we were doing that song. I mean, that record probably came out early, it's 2001 or 2000, I don't know, somewhere. And maybe it's a little later. But we were doing that song, I think, probably as far back as 98. I think that's maybe when it came out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, so much of the music we were doing was coming from your side of the pond, you know? Yeah.
Well, again, Martin led a brief set with his son, Worship Together, and did Obsession and said, this song's now 30 years old. And I was like, instantly felt really old in that moment, but also like, yes, the nostalgia kicked in, which is amazing. Robbie, as I look at your story, I find it fascinating that if we look back at early Robbie C Band, there was a series of EPs that were all featured around the Psalms. And then knowing some of the work that you're doing now featured around the Psalms. And I know that's a big topic for you. I would love to ask you some questions around that. I think when I was reading and looking, you mentioned a quotation by a theologian, Gordon Wenham. Can you tell me about that quotation and kind of like the starting point for you of kind of going, okay, my attention's been grabbed by this book in the Bible?
Yeah. Let me just start with Gordon Wenham, who just coincidentally is also an amazing British man and scholar, one of the leading experts on the Psalter.
Right.
And on the Hebrew language. And I read a book by him called The Psalter Reclaimed.
Okay.
And I read it years and years ago. And I had had, I think like most of us, we have an admiration for the Psalms. We have our favorite Psalms. We read them occasionally. Maybe it's a part of our reading. I think what it just struck me, the history of the Psalms, what they meant to the people of God thousands of years ago, what they have meant to the singing church between their origin and today.
Yeah.
And then what the implications might be for you and I as we gather with our churches. It really is the hymnal in the middle of God's word, you know, and the history, it feels boundless. These are Psalms that span 1,000 years, 150 of them, but written over 1,000 year span from Moses to David, everybody in between. And you know, let me use this as an example, Christian. We were just talking about this, how there was a 200-year period in the church history. I don't remember exactly, maybe 1300 to 1500, somewhere in there. I'm not a church historian, but they could only sing the Psalms. You know, if you and I were leading the music in the church in those days, what they said was the music was actually the number one vehicle for heresy at the time.
Right.
And so they were concerned that you and I might get up there and start singing a bunch of stuff about God. That's not true. And so they said, you know what? We can sing just the Psalms. And so for a couple hundred years, it was the Psalter. It was wow. the Psalms that were sung. And I don't know about you, but today when I step into a gathering, it is hard to find any Psalms being right. sung, yeah. much less an entire set list of them. So I don't think it's necessarily prescriptive. It's a passion of mine. Shane Bernard and I just share a heart's conviction that when we're old and gray, I'm a little gray, but when I'm older and gray, that we would have contributed towards bringing Psalms to life in the modern setting. And I think when I look back at that's something we want to be a part of. And so that's what we're doing. You mentioned the EPs that I recorded. That was a part of the Shanes have done a ton of Psalms.
Yeah.
And we're going to do a Psalms record every summer with a group of songwriters that descend on Dallas. We did it last summer, Psalms from the Wells, a great yeah. album. Great album that's doing really great. People are listening to it and they're hearing the word of God. We're going to do it again this summer. I'll just brag for a second, but we have about 13 songwriters coming from around the world to okay. Dallas. A man from Bahrain, a Nigerian man from Bahrain, a woman who leads her church of about 100 in Ecuador, just by herself on the keyboard. She's coming to write. Several from Canada, one from Asia, several from all over the United States. And we're just going to study the Psalms and write from the Psalms and just wow. asking God, would you give us some songs? So as you can tell, I could fill up this whole hour with that. But I appreciate you asking because it's not only a passion of mine, but of the organization that I serve, yeah. your worship initiative. We want to put new Psalms for the church to sing. And
I love that. I'm
excited about that.
I love that. And it feels like you mentioned it, like the role that you're in now feels so perfect when you look back over your history and your experience and your passion. And this would be one perfect example of that, right? Of being able to be part of that Psalms from the Well and leading mm-hmm. that residential songwriting yeah. kind of experience.
It really is. And, you know, I think for us, one of the things we've chatted about quite a bit here, Shane and I and several of the leaders, is it's one thing for us to have really gifted songwriters roaming the halls.
Yeah.
That's cool. And it's great to make records. We're going to do a lot of that. And it's great to resource those records and teach worship leaders how to play these songs and what they mean. And we're going to do all that.
Yeah.
But that's not enough, honestly. It's not enough. I think developing and pouring into young songwriters who are passionate and who are really asking, begging for
yeah.
somebody walk with me. Give me the tools I need to learn how to craft a song from the Word of God.
Yeah.
And let's practice it every day. Like I want to be a part of that. You know,
that sounds incredible.
So really thrilled about that.
I want to pull on some of those themes in a moment and ask you about development and pouring into others and the role that that has to play for worship pastors at large. And I've got some observations. I'd love to hear your thoughts. And before we get there, if we were to take this amazing songbook that's in the middle of God's word that we get to read as the Psalms, and then we get to look at the songs that are being sung in churches right now, I'm not asking you to be critical, but what are the gaps? What's the distance between the two, that there is stuff that is in the Psalms that we're not singing about or we're not seeing come out in our corporate songs that we're singing?
Yeah, it's a big conversation. So I'll try not to eat up too much space. But I think number one, what comes to mind is just the Eastern Church and the Western Church.
Okay.
I think our Eastern brothers and sisters who are believers tend to have a stronger connection to the whole Psalter. In other words, in seasons of lament, they usually do a good job of lamenting. In seasons of expressing doubt or fear or concern or anxiety, Psalm 42, oh my soul, why are you so downcast, yeah. oh my soul? I feel like, at least as a whole, Eastern Christian church probably does a much better job. In the West, for better or worse, we've just set up the Sunday gathering to make it really difficult for some of those parts of the Psalms to work their way into. Now, that's not true everywhere. I understand. Yeah. I mean, I think there's some churches that really are doing a good job. But I think this is where liturgy factors in. And we teach, we have a whole teaching on this about to come out where we just unpack the reason liturgy sometimes sounds like a stale, you know, stiff word for high church. But really what it means is just the rhythms of the people of God when they gather.
Wow.
And I think one of the rhythms that may be missing from maybe my church or yours or, I don't know, churches around the country and beyond is just a rhythm of the Psalms being read and sung, that we get to a place where it's really hard to exclude them.
Right. Okay.
And we have to almost confront them. So they become part of our rhythms. But let me also just say real quickly, I mean, one of the things that we're about to teach on here that I also just really feeling a heart for walking with leaders through is when Paul writes to the church in Colossae and to the church in Philippi, he says this incredible, hey, psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Mm-hmm. To the church in Colossae, let the word of Christ dwell richly in you as you teach and admonish one another with psalms, hymns, spiritual songs. What does he mean? And so scholars through centuries have had different, you know, ways to kind of process that. But I think at the very least, Paul has some category here. And so to answer your question, hey, what might be missing? Number one, I think it, as it pertains to the New Testament command where the Psalms are mentioned, I think what might be missing is just the Psalms themselves.
Right.
I think for our churches, just to say, number one, are there Psalms settings, whether it be from folks like us or elsewhere? There's some other great people. Sandra McCracken has some great Psalms. Ellie Holcomb has some great Psalms. Yeah. I'm hearing Psalms projects start to pop up and I get excited, Christian, because find some songs that you go, man, these are straight from the Psalms. Let's do them. You know, let's introduce them. And so I think in Paul's command to these churches, I think the Psalms might be what is missing the most. By the way, when he says that, you know, give you a little preview of some of the teaching that we've got. I think Psalms means Psalms. I do. I think it means the Psalter. Psalmos is the word in the Greek. I think hymnos, the hymns, I think these are primarily songs that are revealing who God is.
Right.
Don't you want to sing songs? I mean, whether it was written yesterday, me and you could write a song right now and it could be a hymn. It's revealing the character and the nature of God. Mm-hmm. So some of those are going to be old songs. Some of those might be new songs, but these are God revealing songs. And I think spiritual songs really simply means now that the word of Christ is dwelling in me, I'm now responding to who God is.
Yeah.
I know God rightly because I've heard him speaking in his word. Now I'm responding because it's dwelling in me and I have to get it out. And let me just say one more thing on this. We did this incredible song submission where folks just sent us a song that they wrote with their church. We just said, hey, we want to hear it. We'll give you some feedback. We want to encourage you. Writer as well is really a huge project for us. We want to encourage songwriting at the local church.
Yes.
Who cares how much we're writing? We want you to write, you know? So we did this song submission. It was awesome. By the way, we have about 40 songs that we said, hey, these are good. Wow. I don't know if we need to record them, if we need to help you record them.
Right.
These are gifts from the Lord. But one of the interesting parts of this, Christian, was, and to your question, what might be missing, is when we had our team categorize the songs, they were primarily spiritual songs. Now, again, I think spiritual song, it's in the Word of God.
Right.
There were very few that could be categorized even remotely so as psalms.
Okay.
And there were very few songs that were actually revealing of who God is. Now, that's not an indictment on anyone. I think it's just a reminder to you and I that we need a healthy diet when we when we approach our song canon. I don't know if anybody uses that expression.
Yeah.
That's how we used to say it. Like, just a canon of songs, man.
Yeah.
Is this reflected? Paul's teaching, is it reflected here? And so that may be more than what you asked for.
No, not at all.
But I think, again, if Shane and I could just say to as many that would listen, what might be missing, let's sing the Psalms. You write them. We'll write them. Go find them. Let's make sure we're singing the Psalms.
I really, really love that. I grew up in the UK, spent a long time, as most people my age in the UK did, in the Soul Survivor movement. And through that was Matt Redman for a season, Tim Hughes for a season, Ben Cantillon, and a whole lot of others. And in all of the Soul Survivor, Passion for Your Name, later became Worship Central training, all of that training, this theme of there's a lack of lament in the modern church is something that was always spoken about. But I don't know if I've ever seen a solution to that question. And I think several times when this kind of conversation comes up, okay, what might be missing? I think you even mentioned it in your list of things that you gave there, that there's this, an element of lament that we clearly see reflective in the Psalms, we don't necessarily see in corporate worship. And it leads me to wonder if that's a lack of intentionality on us as worship leaders or songwriters, or if it's the setup of the corporate body that makes personal lament maybe a little bit harder to do in those environments, or maybe it's a mixture of all of it.
I feel like it's probably the latter. And that's why I reference the Eastern Church, because I just think the context by which they gather to worship is mostly, and again, we're generalizing here, but I think it's mostly more communal. Right. I think it mostly is perhaps less, I don't mean to get us off track here, but it probably has less of a performance.
Okay.
And performance isn't always bad. I just mean less of a presentation in the church setting. Yeah. And so it immediately invites the chance to lament and to express some things. By the way, it's not just lament. I mean, the Psalms are filled with, where are you, God? Yeah, I guess that could be a lament, but doubts and fears, anxiety. I mentioned Psalm 42, Psalm 43 also says it, the Psalms of anxiety, even Psalms of confession, Christian. I mean, you know, if you look at the historical church and you look at what liturgy has looked like, and again, when I say liturgy, I'm not talking got to do this, got to do that. I just mean, like, what is your corporate gathering include? Yeah. Music, sermon, the Lord's Supper, like what else? Confession is actually a piece that's probably missing. And there are beautiful psalms, Psalm 51, of course, the confession of David, that I probably need to include more for my own sake and for the people that I'm leading. Hey, let's just confess to the Lord, and he offers grace. I mean, you want to experience the grace of God today? Go through your sin right now and just say, God, I give it to you, and thank you that it's covered, it's paid for. It's been ransomed, you know. So confession, and so all these pieces, lament, yes, I agree with you, but also doubt, fear, anxiety, confession. I think it's probably more of a context issue than anything.
Right. It just reminded me, I had a coffee with a friend of mine who I've met since I've been here in America, and he's early on in his Christian journey, and his testimony is amazing. Could not be further away from God and the church, and now complete transformation. But in all of the conversations, it's fascinating because we'll hit some road bumps in his journey and he'll reach out and go, hey, Christian, can we get together and have a coffee? And it's like, yeah, I've got no answers, but we'll just listen to you. We'll have these conversations. And it's so fresh and so exciting for me to converse with someone who is so close to the point of discovering it all and transformation. Mm-hmm. And sometimes as we get further down the years away from that point, we need that reminder. But I'm having this conversation with him and he's literally articulating, hey, I'm struggling with this and I'm having these doubts and I'm having this fear and I don't know how to trust here and I've got this kind of, and he goes, but we don't sing about any of that. He goes, and I go to church and we don't sing. And do these songs even exist? And then he plays me some of his music that he wrote when he was very far from God and showed me kind of like, this is angry music and there's no angry Christian music. And where is that? And it was, there is, let me show you some of it. And we kind of had a whole conversation around the Psalms and looked at some of that. And it's like, wow, my church doesn't even know this book exists. I was like, well, I'm sure they do, but you know, we got into some really interesting conversations around it all. But
sorry to cut you off, but as we're thinking about context, I mean, we're mentioning context and even your friends saying like, hey, like where are these songs? I think one thing that just comes to mind that I'd want to say real quickly is, you know, one of the things that we talk to worship leaders about is just, do you have the finger, you know, kind of like when you put your finger, like to get your pulse, you know, like, do you have your fingers on the pulse of your church community in the sense that, you know, there are going to be times that you need to lead out with some of these themes.
Yeah.
And there's going to be times that it's not appropriate. I think if you have a death in your congregation that is, I mean, it's clearly impacted your people. Man, I've got my fingers on the pulse of the body. I know I am in community in a way that I am aware of the prayers that might need to be prayed and sung.
Beautiful.
And I think that's the biggest piece. I think sometimes when we think, oh, we got to like, you know, plug a lament here, plug, you know, and put something here about doubt and fear. And I think it's, I'm a living human being with men and women and students and children in a community.
Yeah.
And do I actually know what's happening with them? And are the prayers that I'm singing and inviting them to put on their lips, are they appropriate? And so from the worship leader standpoint, that's one thing that we want to just remind leaders is like, man, fingers on the pulse, fingers on the pulse. And that may not always be dramatic. It may be like, hey, it's kind of a normal season.
Yeah.
So great. I mean, praise God for that. But there's going to be highs and lows on this earth. I mean, Christ, he promised us that. You're going to have troubles and you're going to have some great days and some terrible days. Do we actually know that and can put prayers that fit that in our body?
I think you've just answered my next question, but I'll ask it just in case there's any more to add there. My question was going to be around when you're considering hymns, psalms, spiritual songs, are you doing that from a repertoire, a canon of songs, or are you even going to do it down to a set list level? And how mindful are you of the mix at either, here are the rota of songs that we're using, and here's the set list that we're delivering at any given time of leading worship, and how much of that thought process plays into your thinking, or is it context of who I'm leading and where I'm leading them from?
I love the question. I live and breathe this. And what, let me just say real clearly, if anybody's not sure about Worship Initiative, one thing that we do not do here is hand out prescriptions.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Say, oh, this is what you need to do. I think we're going to look to the Word of God together. And I just appreciate your question, because though we're not handing out do this, I think the Word of God gives us some direction here. We spoke to this already. I think Paul means something.
Right.
I think these categories have meaning. And so I would say to answer that first part is, like, I think it does kind of get granular. I don't think you want to be legalistic about it. It's got to be, man, we got to do this or that. Yeah. I think what it can be is simply glasses that I can put on.
Right.
As I survey the songs that I'm inviting these people in front of me to sing, do I have a healthy diet here? Am I singing the Psalms? Am I singing enough about who God is? I want your friend who's going to coffee with you, and I want that kid on the front row, and I want the older lady in the back and the young couple. I want them all to know more of God. I do. Right. I want to be reminded of who God is, especially in this world feels crazy, man.
Yeah.
But it feels less crazy when I know the one true God. Yeah. So I want more songs. And then, man, am I giving people a chance to respond to that?
Right.
You know, some of our denominations, it's like, hey, give people a chance to get after it and to praise, right, and to lift hands and just say, like, because of who you are. So yeah. I think it's more of a lens. Like, I just want to survey, you know, weekly maybe, but monthly, quarterly, how are we doing? Let me say one more thing here, though, because this is really where my passion lies.
Okay.
Is I do think it's convictional. We have a thing that we are about to launch called Worship Framework. And very simply, what it means is this. Instead of evaluating worship based on performance.
Right.
And I know that's it's easy for me. Like, yeah. I just listened to a mix a couple of days ago of me leading worship. I'm like, oh gosh. Yeah. No, that was pitchy. That was pitchy. That was a bad transition. Whatever. So those things matter.
Yeah.
And by performance, I mean look good, sound good, transition well.
Yeah.
Those things matter. Multi-tracks exist to help us do those things well.
Right.
And I'll be using multi-tracks this weekend. So those things matter, but that can't be where we stop the evaluation.
Right.
So are there deeper convictions that are guiding the decisions that you and I make as we lead worship? And so one of the convictions that I actually use as an example, again, I'm not prescribing this, but I'm just saying, look, the Word of God says Psalms, hymns, spiritual songs. So we've been talking about that already, but it's actually used as a conviction, because when it's a conviction, then it has an immediate implication when I pull up Planning Center. And I'm just seeing, what songs are we doing? How do we do last week, 2 weeks ago? Just ensure that we treat this, what we think the scriptures are saying. How does that actually have on the ground implication? Well, that's a conviction that has an immediate application and implication for Sunday morning and for PCO planning.
Right.
As opposed to, did I like it? How did it sound? Is it a song that we think will fit? It's like those things, yes, you maybe start there, but you can't end there. Okay.
Right. Well, there's so much I could dig into there as well. Talk to me a little bit around your role now at Worship Initiative. It's a fairly new transition. You mentioned being in Dallas and the move from Houston and your role there. And I think this will lead to other questions. So what specifically is your role there at Worship Initiative?
Yeah. You know, fancy titles aside, I mean, my role really every day I get to think about the men and women who serve local churches. We have thousands and thousands of leaders. Some of them are at churches of 50. Some of them are at churches literally of 20,000. I don't care where you are or what size church. I'm thinking about you, men and women leading worship. And then secondly, when I'm thinking about them and their church, I want to make sure that what we're doing here is equipping them.
Right.
So tools in the tool belt. I think that's an expression you used. I don't know if we were offline or online, but okay. I loved that. What are the tools in the tool belt that they need musically, that they need from a ministry standpoint? By the way, I'm giving you our speech right now, buddy. So this is my heart right here. Because we're musicians, we're creatives, we're made to create and respond with this beautiful gift, in our case, music. But we're also ministers. This is not a gig. This would be a terrible gig if it was a gig. It's not a gig. This is God's people gathering to respond to him. So we're ministering on stage and off stage. Well, that we there's a lot of tools we need there.
Yeah.
That a lot of us don't have in terms of theology, pastoral care, sensitivity to the Spirit. But lastly, we're also leaders. I mean, some of these teams, we call that multiplier, but really, I mean, leader.
Yeah.
Some of our folks are leading teams of 30, 40, 50, some bigger churches, like 100 people.
Right.
I mean, they're almost like a CEO, Christian, of like a small company.
Yeah.
And so I want to be thinking every day, if you're like, hey, what do you do there at Worship Initiative? I'm thinking about them, and I'm thinking about anything that we create here, songs, training, theological content, leadership development. It's all aimed at growing that leader in one of those three categories.
Amazing.
And here's the truth. I've been doing this for a long time. I am so far from perfect in those three areas, and I've just not met anybody who's just a home run in all of them.
Yeah.
We all have, we have an assessment tool that our leaders take, and it's like, okay, how am I doing? And that's not to peg us like, oh, look, you know, oh, we just got a number and that's who we are. No, no, no. This is just a way to say, God, where do I need to spend time and energy? Hopefully with a partner like Worship Initiative, where do I need to spend time and energy that you might grow my leadership, my influence for your kingdom on earth as it is in heaven? And I'll just say this, man, I spent years working for a group called Slingshot, incredible group, staffing group, but I just love them. They get hired when churches can't find worship leaders.
Right.
And that's a real thing, man.
Yeah.
And what I've learned is equipped and encouraged men and women who are leading worship are more likely to stick around, and they're more likely to stay in the fight when they feel encouraged. Man, I'm not alone. I'm not alone in this.
Yeah.
It ain't the hardest job in the world, but it's not simple.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot to it. I'm not alone in this, but also, man, I am with a crew of people. I'm getting equipped. I'm getting trained. I'm getting sharpened.
Yeah.
And so, man, long answer, fancy titles, forget all that stuff. I want to help lead this organization in a way that says we want to equip you, encourage you in all three of these ways. Let's do it together. We all need it, you know.
Do you know what I love about that is I didn't actually know the answer to that question. But in our half an hour of conversation, I thought I knew the answer to the question, because in everything that you said that's come out has been this passion for the health and the well-being of the worship leaders that you serve, for their churches, for equipping and seeing them do what they do well in all the answers that we had. And you're even shying away from some of the questions where I'm trying to dig into your success and talk more about them, which is, so it emanates from you. It really is clearly a calling on you even before you articulate that.
I appreciate that, Christian. Let me say real quickly too, I think this matters all the time, but it just feels timely right now. I mean, when I talk about leadership development in those three areas, I mean that with every ounce I am, but I just also want to make sure that we just are stacking hands together, that could be true. We could grow in all three of those areas. But if I'm not personally walking with Jesus, if who I am, character, right, is who you are when no one's looking, if I'm not being refined and sharpened and sanctified in my faith, I may be the best leader you could imagine, but I just want to make sure you know that I am leaning into that side of our organization more than ever. And I just want to remind, I want people to remind me, hey, I know you're talking leadership and that matters. We need it big time, but also we want to be men and women who just are walking with the Lord humbly.
Yeah.
If we're married, we're serving our spouse, laying our life down. If we have children, we're loving them. If we're single, man, we're just pursuing with all the passion and fervor we have the Lord and what he has for us in this time. If we're working in the house, we're working. I mean, whatever it is, wherever we are, I just want to make sure you and I, just before we wrap up in a few minutes, so that we got the chance to say that matters more than anything that we could cover. You know,
I love it. Really love it. So thank you for what you do. And thank you for Worship Initiative. I think we're here at Multitracks. We love getting to partner and love the heart behind all that you get to do. I want to ask you this question. If I look at my journey of worship leading, I grew up as a trumpet player and my dad's a church minister. So I think I was forced into the worship team before I knew what a worship team was or wherever I wanted to be in it. Grew up, transitioned into leading worship, and then had this desire and dream to be a full-time worship leader. And it was something that I was living for and kind of chasing for forever, and was fortunate enough for that to become a reality. I think just before my first child was born, I was 30, was offered a role on staff at a church, and worked for four churches before I called it time and came to join the team of Multichats. Yeah. And in all of that, God also did some incredible, opened some incredible doors of leading at festivals and some of the UK circuit and doing some incredible things there, which I'm incredibly grateful for. Here's my question. It came a little bit later on in my life than I had expected it to. It came later on in my life than I thought I was, you know, I was ready years ago, but God didn't really kind of make this available to me until later on. And when it did, I was acutely aware that the shelf life in my mind of leading youth worship, particularly at these festivals, was fairly short-lived. And I made a promise that I would never walk through an open door that I didn't hold open long enough for somebody else to follow me through. Mm-hmm. And I'm like really thankful that some of the people that we got to walk alongside are now doing far beyond anything that I ever got to do in some of those incredible spaces, and that you play a small part in that journey. I was older and a little bit later on before I started to cotton on to some of that. When I talk to people, and by no means am I calling you old, Robbie, please don't hear what I'm not saying, but when I talk to people that have experience in life and in leadership, there's a desire to mentor, pass on, to see a wider group of people step into all that they have that I don't always see in younger worship leaders. And I know that that's a passion of yours. I know it's come out in our conversations. How do we balance the tension of being worship and pastor in both capital W and capital P, and lead worship well and pastor people well? Why have we made those two things opposite ends sometimes of a spectrum? And what would you say to that challenge of doing that really well and pulling that together? Because I know, even having made myself sound good, the reflection I have looking back is I spent far more time on production than I did on people, and far more time on performance than I did on pastoring. And if I got the chance to do it again, I think I would want to readdress some of that balance.
I just so appreciate the question. And I, you know, Christian, I think the first thing that comes to mind is kind of referencing back to when I talked about these three areas. I usually draw it like in a Venn diagram, you know, right. It's like they kind of have crossover, the musician,
yep,
the minister, and the multiplier.
Right.
And I think when you look at the weekly rhythm, the weekly role of almost every worship leader who's part-time or full-time, maybe even volunteer, number one, they're planning music. They're digging into the creative side. What are we going to sing together? Number two, they're having ministry moments. On stage, sure, but off stage, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
They're having moments of ministry. And number three, they're having leadership moments that sometimes they feel equipped for, and oftentimes, I know I didn't. I didn't have that. I wasn't in business school, you know. And David Crowder and I were communications majors. Yeah, I don't know how that helped us, but that was what, you know. And so my point is this: when we're teaching this with leaders, what we say is take a look at your calendar, because every week you ought to be spending a good chunk of time in each category. Wow. Now, sure, there's some weeks that one of these categories is going to balloon. Mm-hmm. The week before Easter is probably spent more on the music, creative, set list, Good Friday, Easter Sunday planning. I mean, you're right. So, but for the most part, you can take a look at your calendar and see, am I actually serving in each of these lanes? Now, when the answer is yes, that multiplier, and I like the word multiplier because what it implies is, and again, just fired up about some of the content we have coming up, but one of the topics is plurality of leadership. Okay. And I think one of the crises of my generation, and you call me old, man. I got college students, right? So that's some level of old. I got some gray. But my generation, one thing that we did terribly is we just raised up a leader.
Right.
So I literally named a band after myself.
Right.
You know what I mean? Who does that? Right. It's like it was singular.
Yeah.
It was singular. And when I step out, maybe if I'm done with that job, well, guess who's left?
Yeah.
Nobody.
No one.
And so when we're multiplying and investing, when we're leading from a plurality, well, that means present. I think sometimes we think development, I'm pouring into the next generation, I'm going to raise them up, and then they're going to kind of take my spot. And I would say, no, I think plurality of leadership is modeled in the moment. Mm-hmm. And so you're walking with men and women. By the way, I do think plurality actually means men and women. You have a congregation of men and women. Mm-hmm. And so raise up men and women worship leaders. I know titles and I know churches and all that. I get all that. Trust me. But just at plurality, both in gender and in number. And I even encourage churches to put a leadership team together. Man, give away as much as your leadership as you could possibly give away. Now, there are going to be some hard moments. Yeah, you and I know. I mean, we've been around a bit. There's going to be moments you got to step in and potentially say, hey, guys, I need to make a call here. Yeah. But I think we're shocked. I did this in a church in Houston, and I did this mainly because we had great leaders. I didn't do it because I was some special leader. I did it because we had two women who are incredible, not just singers, worship leaders, songwriters, gifted leaders, with myself and two other guys. And I just said, look, y'all, here are the convictions we're going to lead for. Back to our conversation earlier. Lead from. Yeah. Here are the convictions. I'm going to write them down. This is what matters most to us. And it's amazing when you do that, you can kind of step back and go, now y'all choose the songs. Now y'all choose, because they're leading from conviction. Yeah. I didn't need to hover. It wasn't about me giving my stamp of approval. They would choose set lists when I was on. We'd just as much of the leadership as you can give away, you give away. And here's what's crazy, Christian. I mean, last thought on this is it's amazing to me how much longer the shelf life of leaders who actually delegate, invest, disciple. Discipleship is really what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And raise up leaders to lead alongside them right now. Churches need that kind of leadership, whether you're 30 or 60. Churches need it. And I've even said to churches when I'm consulting is, you might actually get younger if you invest in an older leader, assuming they're ready to raise up, celebrate, invest in leaders and go, man, look what God's doing. So I just champion it. I love the question because I think it's not about investing for the future. It's plurality of leadership today.
Love that. You know? Really well put. We're pretty much out of time, but I learned this lesson a really hard way. It was funny. We rocked up at a festival called Spring Harvest in the UK, and we were leading in one of the youth venues. So we're there all week. We probably lead 10, 15 sessions of worship in 5-6 days. In the very first sound check, I lost my voice, just completely went. There was no way it was coming back at all. And it's my name on the bill. It's me and my band, and I'm there about to lead 1,000 young people for a whole week with zero voice. And I didn't sing a note the whole week. And thankfully, we had incredible people on team that were able to do that and step in and do incredibly well. But I had to give away so much more that week than I was expecting to give away and really got to lead team and not necessarily lead vocally. And yeah, and it was a humbling week for me, but it was incredible for our team and for our band. And from that moment onwards, we led with that look where I think it would have been difficult to tell who was leading at any one moment based on where they stood, where they sang, who was singing what. And it became a real great team dynamic. So yeah, I appreciate your encouragement and your challenge there for sure.
I know we're close to the end, but one quick thought on that too, Christian, is when we're talking about worship framework, again, those are those convictions that I keep referencing.
Yeah.
Plurality of leadership is one of the examples. It's another example that I give. But the immediate implication for that, on the ground implication, is again, when I dig into Planning Center, is it just my name on every song?
Right.
I can do that. You could do that. Yeah. Most leaders watch and they go, honestly, I could probably just sing. We'll just kind of stay in these keys.
Yeah.
If it is that I'm not being true to the conviction I said matters most to us. And so the immediate implication is just to say, hey, are we sharing the load on a weekly basis?
Yes.
And it's not just load management. I don't know if you're a basketball fan, but that's like a basketball term. Okay. So it's not just load management, but it's actually just a celebration that you are being led by a team of men and women together. Yeah. And I promise you, churches will win when that's happening.
What a beautiful picture of the church that is as well, one that's done so well. Robbie, thank you so much for your time. What incredible, as I knew, incredible wisdom and goal for us to pick out from here. I'm excited to have to come up with a title for this conversation because I'm not sure what we're going to recap it as, but we'll do that later. And I'm also really excited for all the content that's coming out and would encourage anybody listening to go and check out all the incredible stuff that you have at Worship Initiative, because I think you've done an incredible job of just outlining the heart of the organization and why so much of it matters and the tools that are available and the resources that are available for people to lean into. I'm excited for the next Psalms songwriting project to come out as well. I'm really excited to hear that. But thank you for your time.
I'm hoping one of those is in Spanish, Christian.
Yes.
Our friend from Ecuador is coming. I'm like, you know what? If you're coming all this way, we need to have one of these in Spanish.
Absolutely.
So I'm hopeful. Yeah. And let me just say real quick, I mean, we love multitracks. We champion multitracks around here. And so just grateful for what y'all do. I've heard it a few times, but love the idea that really in so many ways, you're saving time and energy for worship leaders on a weekly basis. And we also would want to say, we want to fill that extra time up with some leadership development. You know, how we see doing our part together to serve these leaders is amazing. So grateful for you guys too, man.
Robbie, I said it earlier, my big regret is I had to make that decision between performance and people and inclusion and excellence. And that's so much of our drive here now, is that we hope that the customers that lean into our resources don't have to make those same decisions because we can free up their time. We can make resources that make the job easier, that they can also do the things that really matter. And some of that absolutely is filling their time with leadership training and resources and becoming healthier people and healthier leaders. So Robbie, thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Christian, thank you, brother. So great.